or something happened, and he'd bring together hundreds and thousands of people at the same time with the same intent. And he thought about this long and hard, and he came up with the idea of Operation Prayer Power, which he devised instrumentation using radionics, which is a science of the collection and manipulation of subtle energies, kind of like electricity, but it's subtle energy, the energy released through prayer and so forth. He devised instrumentation that could collect this energy, intensify it through the collection, and then other instrumentation that could radiate it out. So this mission is very much, to me, is very much the Aquarian Age mission, because I'm an astrologer, and this Aquarian Age is the coming together of science and spirituality. And in fact, I say that if an organization isn't bringing these two things together, then it's not truly a New Age organization. I would go that far. But anyway, Operation Prayer Power has been performed since 1974, a long time, in five centers around the world. And I have been in London for many, many years, Los Angeles, another center where Operation Prayer Power is, and now Royal Oak, Michigan. I'm here now, and Operation Prayer Power is performed here in only five places in the whole world, because, of course, the instrumentation is difficult to manufacture, has to be skilled people who are also initiates, and, you know, feel very fortunate to be here.
Mm-hmm. So this amplifies prayer? Is that how this works?
Yeah, sort of. You have a group of people. The outside group perform or join together in mantra. You know what mantra is? It's the a Sanskrit sound. It's
right.
The repetition of Sanskrit sounds, which has an effect on the environment, can raise the vibrations. And this provides a kind of a mushroom of energy, if you like, spiritual energy. And then we have a prayer team in the middle of highly trained prayers who, using mudra, which is hand sign, will take the energy invoked by the mantra team, and through their prayers, through their concentration, and through their ability to project this energy, they then put it into a container, which is called a battery, which is a radionics apparatus. And it can stay there forever, you know, for hundreds of years or just however long it takes to fill it. And in the past, we've had many, many releases to different specific situations over the years. So it's a very fascinating mission, and one which I've been involved with since the beginning, 1974. So I feel very fortunate.
Mm-hmm. So is this sent out to the world in general, or is it sent to a certain area that might need some type of extra help? Who determines where it goes and how it goes?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Actually, it's a bit of both. It is sent to the world as a whole, but it's also sent to specific situations. And especially in the early days, there were some fantastic situations where, you know, it's like you offer a prayer to someone across the world, and I'm sure a lot of the listeners have done it, who's sick. And unless you know that person, you don't really know if it's going to make a difference. You know, it's very difficult to ascertain the effects of one's healing. But it's always good to keep offering the prayers, because we know that prayer energy is what the world needs, you know. And so it's often hard to know. We send it to a specific situation, but there have been some vivid examples over the years of things happening. Like, for example, we released energy at one point in the 1970s. There was a war brewing Turkey and Cyprus. Do you remember that, Mike?
Vaguely, yes.
Yeah. Well, years later, I was taking a healing class in London, and I think there's just one or two people taking the class, and one of them happened to be a soldier who was on the front lines of this war. And I told him about this Operation Prayer Power release to the war, you know, and when it happened. And he said to me, he said he went cold, because when I said that, he remembered what was happening at the time, and he said they were fighting on the front lines, and when suddenly there was a ceasefire, and he remembers saying to his friends, this is something that's come from God, because it's so out of the blue that it was so unexpected, you know. So that was like a sort of a confirmation.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's been performed silently and quietly over the years, and I think in time, it will become much more well known. But right now, it's still in the early stages. It's been going, you know, maybe it's 40 years this year, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, one thing we want to do later in the year is hold a public charging session. Normally, people have to come and be trained and certain and the mantras and so on. But we every now and then we hold a public session that everyone can come to, and we train them there and then. And so we might be doing that later in the year, and everyone will be very welcome to come and experience it. At the moment, anyone can come and watch and see what we do, and they're very welcome. It takes place in Royal Oak every Wednesday. Sometimes it's a Saturday morning, every Wednesday evening.
Mm-hmm. So there is power in groups, right?
Yes. Yes, I know you believe that too, Mike, definitely. And in fact, William Tiller, the scientist, said that if you gather together a group of people, if you've got 10 people and their intent is the same, like they all want to send prayer to a particular situation, Syria or something, if their intent is the same, the energy output is squared the number of people. In other words, it's equivalent. If you've got 10 people doing that, it's equivalent to 100 people.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've got 100 people, it's equivalent to 1,000. So this is really important to come together in groups. Yeah, this is a part of this Aquarian age, I believe.
Mm-hmm. And
what do you feel about that?
Right. Well, no, I agree with that. And I think that this is something we were talking about a little bit before the show, is the ripple effect. If you have like-minded people together putting out a certain vibration or energy, that creates a ripple so that, you know, it touches more and more people and goes out further and further until, again, more and more people get involved.
It's absolutely true, isn't it? And isn't that what we need to do? Those of us listening who are interested in, you know, spiritual thought and metaphysical thought, I think at this time, which is such a difficult time in our history, we really need to be spreading the knowledge that we have and the wisdom we've gained and the love that we can manifest. I think it's so important to have that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
Approach, yeah.
Right. Now, how did you personally get involved with the Etheria Society?
Oh, thank you for the question. I've always been on a quest. I'm sure people can relate to that from a young age. I was a psychic child, as many children are, and could see divas or fairies, and I used to see bad things too,
mm-hmm.
Which I didn't like, people who'd passed on, but I didn't like that. But anyway, I was psychic, and my parents used to send me up to this Orthodox church near where we lived on a Sunday morning, and I remember I used to go up further up to a spiritualist church, and they didn't even know for a few months that I was going to it. But the spiritualist church was much more fun to me, and we did healing there. I was 14 at the time, and we did we had a couple of people who ran this group. They were really good psychics, and they would do rescue work in the lower realms. And so I got really interested. And then one day when I was 16, somebody came along and gave a talk about the Etheria Society. This was in the, I think, late 60s or something like that. And then later on, I was still searching. I went through various religions and, you know, Buddhism and various things, Rosicrucianism, Theosophy, Mystic Christianity, and eventually when I was 22, I came back to the Etheria Society because it just answered all my questions, and also it's very practical. It was run by a living master who really was a pioneer ahead of his time, and I was very fortunate to be a close student of his for over 20 years until he passed away, or still am, actually.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, how was Dr. King as a leader? Was he very charismatic?
Yes, he was very unusual. It's always hard to describe him because I've never met anyone like him before or since. And I've met some remarkable people. I have. I mean, you know, some fantastic people. But here was someone who was so much more enlightened than me or anyone else I'd ever met that it was hard to categorize him. And I remember when I was kind of, like I said, I was a psychic child, and I had this. And growing up, I was psychic too, and I had this habit of when I met someone for the first time, I would like tune into them and try and like read them, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I remember the first time I met Dr. King, and I just instinctively did that, and I remember he put a block on it, and he smiled. he knew what I was doing. You know, he was always way ahead of me or anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
He was a genuine yoga master. He was able, had fully and consciously risen the great power of Kundalini up through Susumna, the channel in the center of the spine, and had opened fully and consciously the higher chakras and was able to, had gained enlightenment. And he was also a brilliant medium. He was also a scientist. He was way, way ahead of his time and very down to earth. Had a wonderful sense of humor, too. He was so alive, so full of life that he was fantastic, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Very strong individual, very mm-hmm. determined. And his body of wisdom, he was a channel for an advanced knowledge. Over 600 messages he received from extremely enlightened beings from even beyond this world. But his own wisdom was fantastic, too, his own knowledge. Very humble man, too.
Mm-hmm. And real briefly, I just want to say that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This program is Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. This month, my special guest is Chrissy Blaze. She is an international speaker, author, and ordained priest in the Aetherius Society. And we're talking about a lot of different things. Right now, we're concentrating on the Aetherius Society and its founder, Dr. George King. Now, Dr. King received all these messages. Did he find that very taxing to be a channel for all these messages, or did he welcome it?
That's a very good question, Mike. You know, I know that you know a lot about these subjects because you would just ask the right fantastic questions, you know, that other people wouldn't even think about. And that's why you're such a great host, too. But
Thank you.
Yes, very, very taxing. Very taxing indeed. Some of the transmissions, or we call them transmissions, but they're, you could say, messages, were received by these elevated beings. He started with receiving communication with people from the higher mental realms around this planet. And then later on, 1954, he started to receive communication from enlightened beings from beyond this planet. And some of them would be 60 minutes longer. And when he came out of this trance condition, which he went into, a positive somatic trance, a high form of yogic trance, not a negative trance, where mm-hmm. he's taken over, not that at all, a positive trance condition. He was totally exhausted. And, you know, I think it took years off of his life, actually, because he received 600 of these incredible body of work, which were given not to the Aetherius Society, by the way, but to the world. But the Aetherius Society is like the custodian, and we spend a lot of time and money making sure they're up to date. You know, the original ones are obviously recorded on tape.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so
right.
over the years, they've had to be upgraded and digitized now. And it's a huge job. And they're in vaults in London and Los Angeles. There's two copies of everything in vaults, and they're constantly being taken care of, you know, and a lot of them published, too.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you think that, in essence, Dr. King kind of gave up part of his life to receive these messages to help mankind in general?
Yes, I think he did. Yes, he did sacrifice himself, as I think all great teachers who come to this earth come in sacrifice, really. You know, whether it's the Lord Buddha or the Master Jesus or Sri Krishna or a master like Mahatma Gandhi, there's always an element of sacrifice, I believe, to move civilization forward.
Mm-hmm.
And even some of the great minds, the great thinkers, the great scientists, if you read about their life, and in one of my astrology books, Superstar Signs, I have 60 sort of heroes from different fields that I admire that personify the different sun signs. And I was so fascinated to do this research and realize that nearly everybody that I found who really inspired me had really sacrificed their lives, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And people, for the most part, at the time, they completely ignored them, or they really suffered at the hands of people. Like Mahatma Gandhi, for example, was locked up in prison for years of his life, and, you know, so it goes on. And yet afterwards, people look back and think, wow, you know, they move forward civilization. So sacrifice, I think, it goes hand in hand with true love.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right. I think many great people just really give of themselves and make great sacrifices because oftentimes they're persecuted, people don't really understand them, they're afraid of them, or something, they don't like them, they don't like their message, whatever the case may be. But I do think many great people, men and women, have had to sacrifice themselves in order to progress mankind.
Absolutely, Mike. I totally agree with you. And I think it's very sad that we don't, as a whole, recognize these great people at the time. You know, when you read about these, you know, I'm an astrologer, and you read about these old astronomers like Copernicus and Galileo and all these people who insisted, you know, that we didn't live on a flat Earth and that the Earth went around the sun and all this, and they were persecuted and some of them tortured, you know, for their beliefs. And yet now we take it for granted.
Right, but yes.
Now, what is it about humanity, Mike? Perhaps you can tell me that we can only see things in retrospect, it seems. Like,
right.
You know, why can't we realize at the time? Well, some people do, I think.
Right. Well, that is one of the eternal mysteries, how that happens. Because when you're going through it, you're living through that moment, again, people don't recognize that for whatever reason. And, again, people are shunned, they're, you know, encased in poverty, whatever the case may be, they really do sacrifice themselves.
Yes, exactly. Well, Dr. King, he was in England. He's English, actually. He was born in the north of England, very down-to-earth people. And in 1959, I believe it was, he got an instruction from these higher beings that he had to go to America, you know, and continue his mission in America. Well, when he left, he had no money, and to support himself, he had to go on a lecture tour and stay with people. And, you know, it's like, you know, now, a lot of the teachers, they go out there and they have lots and lots of money, but, you know, the truly great people, I believe, they're prepared to give it up and to do whatever it takes. I think that is the spirit that's really needed at this time, too. I really believe that.
Mm-hmm.
The spirit is going to really save us, I think.
Right. It's not easy to sacrifice yourself like that. Now, also, he heard from the cosmic masters. Who would they be? Can you kind of define them at all?
Yes. Thank you for the question. I'm sure listeners will realize that we're always helped on this earth. You know, we've had masters and teachers of both male and female of all races and nationalities have come to give us their wisdom. And it's said, isn't it, Mike, that when you reach a certain point in your evolution, the teacher will appear. When the student's ready, the teacher will appear.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I've heard that.
Yes, and I'm sure we've all had that experience. And it may be in the form of a book, or it might be, but when you're ready for the next piece of inspiration or to move on, the next initiation, if you like, it will come by karmic law. Well, so these great teachers have come, and there is a body of very advanced masters, male and female, from different races, called the Spiritual Hierarchy of Earth. You've probably heard of those. Who've volunteered, they've ascended masters, volunteered to stay on this earth and help us. But the cosmic masters are and have a relationship with this spiritual hierarchy, but they are from the higher realms, you might say, of other planets, even within this solar system and beyond.
Mm-hmm.
And people say, well, there's no life on the other planets. But you see, you could look at this earth and not see life on the higher planes or the lower planes. Which does exist. Like when we die, we continue to exist.
Mm-hmm.
And these planes, the higher planes and the lower planes, too, are very populated. But you wouldn't necessarily see them unless you were psychic, you know. And we wouldn't necessarily see any life on other planets. But there is a lot of evidence. You know, I don't know if you, because you're probably not old enough to remember, Mike, but the book Eric von Daniken, Chariot of the Gods.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Mm-hmm.
You remember that one?
Oh, yes.
That was a great book, wasn't it? It was a sort of a mm-hmm. cult book at the time. And in fact, my friend Richard Lawrence has done a similar body of research with some of his books. But there's a lot of evidence, even in the Bible and before the Bible, and of stories of, you know, landings of UFOs and intelligent life. And I believe, in fact, we believe in the Aetherius Society that some of the greatest teachers, the Lord Buddha, the Master Jesus, Sri Krishna, did come from other planets, In fact, Jesus says, I know you can always misinterpret his teachings however you want, but I am from the bright and morning star, you know, in Revelations, which is, of course, the planet Venus, which we do believe. So I know it's for some people that's hard to believe, but do your research, and you'll find that there is a lot of evidence.
Mm-hmm. Well, I remember as a small child, my mother, who got me interested in metaphysics, had friends that had recordings from beings from other planets, or they claimed to be from other planets, and there were two different tapes I heard, one entity claiming to be from Venus, the other from Mars, and it was interesting how they portrayed the fact that they were so much more advanced and how they went through many of the same things that we are going through on Earth. It's just that we are at whatever stage of development we're supposed to be at in order to work through things. And I just thought that was very interesting. And again, this was many, many years ago, but I do recall that.
Well, that is interesting, Mike. You don't still have those tapes, I suppose.
Oh, no. These were friends of my mother. And again, I was probably maybe 8, 9, 10 years old. And trust me, that was
so
many years ago.
You've been on this quest for a long time, too.
Right. Well, again, like I said, my mother was the one that got me interested in metaphysics. But the point I'm trying to make is I can relate to some of that and the fact that some of the claims that I heard, I don't know, you know, how much are true or not, but I have heard some of these claims that, you know, we will get there. We are working through things. We're actually a little bit behind some of the other planets here just in this solar system.
Yeah, we're told by the cosmic masters at the bottom of this, the bottom classroom in this solar system.
Yeah.
Because of the fact that we have destroyed civilizations in the past, Atlantis, Lemuria, Maldek, which is interestingly, everybody's heard, I'm sure, of Atlantis, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Lemuria, or the Mu, it's sometimes called. Maldek is not so well known, but that was a civilization before that, which apparently was a planet which we destroyed through nuclear experimentation or war. And metaphysically speaking, the destruction of a planet, because the planet is a great being, is very, very kind of a karmic crime, you know, of great proportion. And we did that, and then we came again and grew again through the kind of slime and, you know, until we reached Lemuria, and we just destroyed not the planet but the civilization and then Atlantis again. And now we've reached a point, and this is why the cosmic masters have communicated so much, and not just through Dr. King but also other people too, but he is known as the primary communicator, primary terrestrial mental channel. Because this is an important time, because we could once again destroy our civilization. And it's like a crucial time when you just have to look at what's going on in the world now, in North Korea and so on, you think, well, it's really, you know, a step away, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And it has been since the 60s, really, the 50s.
Right,
so it
can
be. It's a crucial time.
Yes.
So we're the bottom, so we're still learning. So, of course, the more advanced beings, intelligences, being so much more loving and compassionate and also technologically advanced in every way, look at us with great compassion, and they're doing their best to help us. But, of course, we have free will, and they can't intervene directly because we have free will. But they can inspire, they can give their wisdom, they give their practical help in other ways too. It's very interesting what your mother played you those tapes. And can I give a little ad for something that's something I'm doing next week on that note?
Yes, go ahead.
You just reminded me, Mike, on the 22nd, which is next Friday at 7:30 at the Aetherius Society, I'm launching a series of monthly study classes on these cosmic transmissions. And it'd be great if people could come. It's at 7:30, followed by a social. And it should be really nice. So that's at the Aetherius Society, which is Royal Oak, 3119 North Campbell Road, just south of 13 Mile.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully a few people will come out to that event. And real quickly, I just want to remind everybody listening that you are listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This program is Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. And this month, my special guest is Chrissy Blaze. She is an international speaker, author, an ordained priest in the Aetherius Society. Now, apart from all the other things that you have studied with the Aetherius Society, what do you feel is the most important and primary message of the Aetherius Society?
I think the primary message is that the power of love can change the world. You know, Dr. King used to say, the biggest energy crisis on this earth is not the shortage of gas, it's actually the shortage of spiritual energy or love. He called it the spiritual energy crisis. And the way we can help to solve that together is through prayer, healing, coming together and giving service to others. In other words, putting our love into action for the world. So it doesn't matter what religion you have. This is part of our teachings too. It doesn't matter whether you believe in God or not, but it's what you do, the love, amount of love you express. And I'm not talking about an emotion here, because you don't have to like everybody in the world to offer your love to the world, as you know, Mike. But it's this expression, this radiation of love, I think would be the primary message, really, at this time, that will truly make, can truly make a difference, can turn things around. Because if you think about it, the problem with the world, the main problem, is consciousness. In other words, there is enough to go around, but it's greed, selfishness, jealousy, and all those other things. I'm not talking about the people listening, but in the world, that stops it. And so the more love there is, the more consciousness has to change to one which is of oneness, of a realization that we're our brother's keeper, and so on and so forth. But it's up to the people who do care to make that move. And, you know, a critical mass, it doesn't, as you said, Mike, it's a ripple effect. It doesn't take that many people, but it takes people's dedication and a certain amount of sacrifice to really start to make a difference.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, that can be the hard part, is getting everybody on board and getting moving in the right direction. Is that how you feel?
Yes. Yes, it really is. It really is. I mean, even something like Operation Prayer Power, which is such a fantastic mission, it's hard to get people to come out. You know, there's a lot of distractions. In fact, somebody said to me today, oh, I do want to come to the study class on Friday the 22nd if nothing gets in the way. And I said to her, well, probably something will get in the way, because I've found that over the years. You know, if you're about to do something important, I'm sure you can relate to this, Mike, something nearly always gets in the way, but we just have to keep going, right?
Mm-hmm. That's Murphy's Law right there.
Is it?
Sometimes it is, anyway.
Yeah. If it's something important, generally something will try and get in the way. You know, it's the lower self and the higher self, right?
So, right. Well, again, it gets back to free will and what a person does and how people react to that.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. We have free will. We can choose how we're going to live every single day, can't we?
So. Mm-hmm. Yes. We just have to deal with the consequences, whatever they may be. That's all.
Yes, exactly, exactly. If we determine to live each day well, with integrity, with love, with wanting to help, then I think, you know, Dr. King used to say, don't worry about putting money in the bank, because when you die, it won't matter. But put money in the spiritual bank, because when you die and your next life, you're going to get the good karma for that. You know,
right? Yeah.
Or in this life too.
Yeah. Right. Well, it's nice to have the brand new car and the big home and whatever else. But anyway,
I don't like that. That's true. Yeah.
Well, some people feel like that. I like the finer things in life. I'm sure that you probably do as well.
I do, mm-hmm. In moderation.
Right.
I know if I was to have too much, I'd start to feel kind of bad, I think. But I like a nice car and a nice home. I can't complain about that. I can't say I don't.
Mm-hmm. Now, what can you tell us about the 12 blessings? Is this something that Dr. King channeled, or how did he come up with the 12 blessings?
Oh, yes, the 12 blessings are so wonderful. One of the beings that were channeled through Dr. King, and this, some people might not like me saying this, but you just have to listen to the 12 blessings to know it's true, was the Master Jesus. And he said that he's come again at this time to offer his love, and in fact, he never left us. And he gave many wonderful transmissions. In fact, on the 22nd, I'll be will be studying one of the Master Jesus' messages, which is really fantastic. I mean, one thing he says, I'll get on to the 12 blessings in a second. He says, the age which is breaking now brings with it great possibilities and is the age of science. And this is one of my favorite sentences. Science by itself is like the soulless wanderer of the realms of night, yet a warmth will come out of love to fashion it into a tool so that it becometh as a wise man finding his home. Warm it with that love, my brothers. Let that wondrous, everlasting power from your hearts fall upon this science so that it becomes as a tool in the hands of everlasting divinity and not that soulless thing which you have made of it. I have always remembered that because it's one of my favorite lines. I had to bring that in. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. No, that's fine.
But anyway, the 12 blessings he delivered in 1958 over 12 consecutive Sundays. And these are wonderful blessings. It's like a New Age Bible, if you like, where prayers and blessings are given to those who work for peace, to the wise ones, to those who love, to the planetary ones, the thanksgivers, the healers, the Mother Earth, the Mighty Sun, and so on, out into the galaxy and beyond. And but not only is this a wonderful set of teachings, which is very profound, and I tell you, poetically brilliant, and I love poetry, but it's also a spiritual practice. And on Monday nights, for example, at the Society, every week we perform this practice of the 12 blessings, and it's something you can do at home. It takes 15 minutes, in which you can release tremendous love through you. So it's a wonderful, wonderful practice and teaching, the 12 blessings. And it's a little book, and also we have the actual recordings, which we have on CD, and you can hear. And actually, on a Sunday morning, we play one of these blessings every Sunday during our service at 11 o'clock, and people hear, but not just hear, but experience the vibration of love of this master. Fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Right, so he touches many, many people with these 12 blessings, do you think?
Yes, he does. They were given, as I say, to all humanity, not to just to Christians, but they're non-denomination, if you like. They were given to the whole world, because, of course, if you do believe that Jesus was a cosmic avatar, if you like, or a god, then you would have to believe that he came to humanity as a whole, not to one specific group of humanity.
Mm-hmm. Right. He wanted to spread the message with the entire world and let them benefit, correct?
Exactly, as I believe he still does today. And he would often say, you know, where a few are gathered in my name, truly, truly, there will I be. And he's never left us. And his great power of love is, I mean, his change has echoed down through the centuries, 2,000 years. And, you know, we haven't played our part, but he has never left us, and the great power which is his is still very much alive on this earth today.
Mm-hmm.
Thank goodness it is, because I think without these great ones, we wouldn't be in the situation we're in.
Right. Well, it helps keep us moving in the right direction, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think we'd be completely lost without great teachers that have come and shown us the way forward. I know I would, and shown us the light and given us the truth. And, you know, when we're ready for it, we look at it and we say, well, that's, you know, that's obvious, that's logical. But if we hadn't been shown it, we wouldn't think that, you know. It sort of mm-hmm. moves us forward a step.
Right, right. But again, when you're ready for the message, like you were saying earlier, you know, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. It's the same thing when people are ready to receive the message. That's when they get it. That's when they receive that information.
Absolutely. And I think it's so inspiring to think that, because sometimes on the spiritual path, and we're all on a path in a way, but people go through, you know, difficult times, you know, in the dark nights of the soul. And I know I have. But nearly always I found it's just after that point where something really important happens. You have that initiation, you meet that person, you have that revelation, that realization. So if anyone listening is going through a difficult time or a dark time, just keep going and the light will come.
Mm-hmm. Don't quit, right?
Don't quit. Because when it's darkest, it's usually just before the brightest dawn. It really is. This sounds trite, but it really is true. I'm sure you found that too, Mike, haven't you, in your own life?
Oh, yeah. Well, again, I've read that same thought, you know, along the way that, you know, and just when you think it's worse, don't quit. Keep on going, because you never know when that next break may come that you've been wanting or expecting, and all of a sudden it's there just when you perhaps were ready to give up and thought that nothing is going to come of this.
Yeah, and it's also sort of looking at the signs of life, because life gives you signs, doesn't it,
mm-hmm.
along the way, and sometimes we miss them. And interestingly, I was speaking on the radio to Dr. Raymond Moody. Do you know him, The Life After Life?
Yes, I've read a few of his books.
Yeah, he's a wonderful man, a very charming southern gentleman, and he was saying how when he was at a crossroads and wasn't sure the next step to take, because he's been doing fantastic research all his life, and he hasn't stopped now, he's still doing it. But he said he was in a bookstore and a book fell on his head, and that was the next piece of research. And I found a similar thing happened to me, and it's like we have to look at the signs of life. Sometimes we're always thinking, well, what's going to happen, or I don't know what's going on. But life has given you all sorts of signs, but you're not sort of being aware of them. So I always say to people, look at the signs, you know, look at the signs. They really show you the way.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know I've missed a lot of signs in my life. I don't know about you, but I think
A
lot of people probably have missed a few signs here and there. Hopefully we get the majority of them, and I think that's important. Do you think that most of the people do see the signs along the way?
Probably not, but you know what? When something's important, it tends to come back to you, doesn't it? It's like, you know, you miss it the first time, and then it will come back in another form, or, you know, somebody will say something, and you kind of miss it.
Mm-hmm.
And then somebody else, like the next week, somebody else says the same thing in a different way, and then somebody gives you a book saying the same thing, you know?
Right, yeah, until you finally say, I think somebody or something is trying to tell me something.
I know. I'm in this ancient Greek time right now. Everybody is talking to me about the ancient Greeks, and I used to be into the ancient Greeks years ago, Plato, and I read The Republic and all that. Probably a lot of people did. But just now, everybody I speak to is like, I'm reading books. It's all about the ancient Greeks. I'm thinking, what am I supposed to learn from this? But I'm going to carry on this path and do some research, and I know that something is going to come out of this.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, it depends on what speaks to you, and I think people realize that, you know, and again, what you're trying to imply is just, it can be a little inkling. It can be something as simple as just seeing a note or noticing a book or something very, very simple, yet it can be very profound in their life.
Exactly, exactly. And you're right, because like with me, it's an inkling, but it keeps repeating, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so that to me is a sign. If you hear it once, it's nothing. But if you keep different people say it, it's definitely something to be noticed. Yeah, it's going to lead you somewhere.
Mm-hmm. And I think if you have had a certain interest most of your life, that, again, is trying to tell you something, that follow your heart and pursue that and investigate it. Do you feel the same way?
Oh, Mike, you're absolutely true. Isn't that really is the right thing to do, isn't it?
Well, I like to think so.
I mean, it's the hardest thing to do sometimes, but it really is the simplest, too.
Right. Well, again, sometimes people are afraid to really do what they want to or to follow their heart because they're afraid of what others may think or failure or whatever the case may be. But it's easier said than done, I think.
It takes courage, doesn't it? Yes,
mm-hmm.
It takes courage to follow your heart and to be authentically who you are, too, and not get blown away by what other people think you should be doing or what the world thinks you should be doing. But, you know, really, and that's why it's important, I think, is to spend time in quiet time, you know, reflection, meditation, prayer work, and so on, so that we can sort of attune to our hearts.
Mm-hmm. Right. Again, not always easy to do, but it's a great thing if you can do it. And I think through meditation, you can definitely make strides towards that goal.
And that's another beauty of the 12 blessings, because you don't have to sort of sit there and try and attain meditation for an hour. You can pick up the book, and immediately you get this connection to your heart when you start reading the prayers and performing the practice. I tell you, it's immediate. And you know, too, not only is it tuning you to your heart and putting you in the right frame of mind, but at the same time you're sending out love into the world. So it's like a win-win-win-win, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
why I truly love that practice. It's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Now, also, Dr. King espoused something called spiritual ecology. Can you touch upon that?
Yes. He was talking about that as part of this, what he called the spiritual energy crisis. And he believed he talked about ecology, I think it was in the late 60s, when people weren't really talking about it. And he believed that a consciousness of the earth as a great living goddess was very, very important. And so he talked about this spiritual ecology of giving back to the earth in spiritual ways and giving thanks and appreciation to the earth. And in a way, that's a spiritual ecology. You know, we can look after the earth and do green things, which is very, very important, but also don't forget to offer your appreciation for this great goddess, you know, a great being, who, if we think about it, without the earth, we wouldn't be able to continue our existence. And I know the ancient or the indigenous cultures would automatically do that, and I think it's something that we've lost. And when we lose that connection to Mother Earth, we lose a little bit of our heart, a little bit of our soul, I think, because it's like our mother, you know, our true mother. And so he introduced, too, a global healing mission called Operation Sunbeam, where through similar thing to what I've been saying about prayer power, energy is given back, spiritual energy, to the earth as a token karmic manipulation or token repayment on behalf of humanity. So it's like a giving your prayers, but really it's been tremendously, what's the word I'm looking for, potentized through this equipment. So that's another mission we do, mm-hmm. which is, I suppose you could say, spiritual ecology.
Mm-hmm. So is this like prayers for the earth itself, just not the people on earth?
Absolutely, yes. As I'm saying, it's actually the earth, Mother Earth, you know. Mm-hmm. And even scientists have said, geologists, I think they are, geologists, geophysicists, that's the word, that the earth has an in-breath and an out-breath. Is a living being. And of course, if you just have to look at nature, don't you, to realize that she's obviously living.
Mm-hmm.
And these are her fruits, if you like. And I know, I believe that there is a kingdom of nature spirits called the Devic Kingdom. In fact, I'm reading a book now about the nature spirits, the spirits of the water, the earth, the air, and fire, salamanders, which is very, very fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Which tend to the nature of Earth and actually use the energy we give them to create weather conditions and all this. You know, so there's this constant interaction between us, humanity, and the nature spirits, or the devas, as they're called.
Mm-hmm. Now, you are an author yourself. What kind of books have you written, and do you feel they have been channeled through you, or how do you achieve the knowledge to express that through a book? How does that come to you, and how does that work for you?
Oh, no, they're not channeled. I mean, I don't pretend to be a medium, although I've had, I think, poetry kind of inspired and things like this, and perhaps some parts of the writing inspired. But basically, half of my books are astrology books, and so they're not my inspirational books. I try and write them. I love astrology because it's a study of the cosmos, you know, and it's such a helpful, practical study, but it's so complicated that people often lose track. So what I've tried to do in my astrology books is present it in a very simple way that people can start to use astrology as a tool. And my other half of books are spiritual books and Deeper into Love, Power, Prayer, which is just about to be re-released, actually. It's an expanded edition. Next month, and a couple of other books. I can't even think what they are right now.
Yeah. There's so many,
they're
right?
They're on my website.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh.
Right. But again, this is something that I'm sure you feel great pride in being able to present to people in general. And as far as astrology goes, there are so many different nuances, it's hard to cover it all at one time.
Yes. I can't. I mean, that's very kind of you to say I should feel proud, and I appreciate that. But I can't say I do, because I'm probably my own worst critic.
Oh, well, we all are, yes.
There really are some great writers around. I'm totally inspired by some of the writers, I tell you. So I think my contribution is okay. You know, I'm trying to do my best to shine a light on certain things. Yes, and try and give... I like to try... My other book is Work Out for the Soul. I try and give spiritual teaching that can help people to change their lives. Like, I like things to be practical, you know, that can not just talk about, oh, go into meditation for an hour, because people don't know how to do that. I like to try and give the nitty-gritty of how people can do certain things. You know?
Mm-hmm. Well, again, it depends on what a person is interested in and what they're willing to do to attain certain insights into life and love. And it's not always easy to really change and force yourself to do something that you're not really willing and ready to do.
No, you're exactly right, Mike. You are so right. But, of course, within us all, there is this spark of the divine, mm-hmm. Which is we've kind of wrapped up over the centuries, over the lifetimes. And so we all have this spark. And it's a wonderful thing. And so even though somebody might not be interested in it right now, at some point they will be. And somebody will say something, or they'll read a book, or they'll watch a movie, and it will inspire them in a certain way. And, you know, the light will come. You know, I'm a great believer in that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Sooner, hopefully sooner rather than later, correct?
Yes, hopefully, because the world needs people to be expressing their spiritual nature more fully at this time, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree with that?
Oh, yes, right. And again, real quickly, I just want to remind everybody that this is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. The name of this program is Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. My special guest is Chrissy Blaze. She is an international speaker, author, and ordained priest in the Etheria Society. Now, here's something I want to know. What is your definition of light? You've referred to that several times during the interview here. What do you mean by light and energy in that respect?
Oh, energy. Well, spiritual energy, is that what you...
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess, you know, you referred to, you know, the light, and, you know, is that a spiritual, you know, energy? How is that channeled, or how is that controlled? Is there anything to that? How does that work?
Yes. We all have the ability to channel light or spiritual energy. You just have to, you know, a simple example, if a child falls and grazes their knee, their mother will automatically put her hand on the knee and soothe it, because we all have this. Love is not just a feeling, it's an energy, and it can be measured, and it has been measured. And so that's what I mean by that. We have the ability to not just love, but to radiate love as a light, as an energy. And this is what I believe, one of the things also we're being called to do, the workers for light, for peace on this planet. We're being called not just to feel love, but to radiate our love. You see, there's a difference there. It's more of a dynamic approach, really.
Right, right. Well, the reason I was curious about that and asking about that, my mother, getting back to her again, would often say, you know, send the light. That was like a quick, short prayer. And for any situation where it might be detrimental or dangerous, that was her answer. You know, send the light, send the light, send the light. That was always her response to certain situations. And I was just curious as to what you thought the light was.
Exactly that, yes, through prayer or through your healing work or just a positive thought. But your mother sounds wonderful. Is she still with you? Or?
No, she is gone on. She passed away, several years ago, mid-90s. But, channeled a lot. She was an automatic writer, and she did a lot of different things. And she channeled a few books as well and what have you. But, again, didn't really get published. Well, not really, no. I mean, they just are something that was, again, people weren't interested when she was doing this in the late 60s, early 70s. You know, people weren't ready to hear that in a lot of cases. And she never really got published other than some self-publishing that she did herself.
She sounds a remarkable woman. I'm sure she's, you probably felt her around from time to time.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I'm sure that she's standing behind me somewhere along the line.
I know. My own mother passed away in 2006. I miss her terribly, but I do feel her from time to time. But she did warn me that when she passed on, she would want to do a lot of studying, so she wouldn't be hanging around me too much.
Yeah, right. She doesn't want to bother you too much, right?
Yeah, well, she didn't want to be bothered too much.
Mm-hmm.
She wanted to get on. She mm-hmm. had a lot of studying to do because she was just, you know, becoming interested in all these spiritual things. And, mm-hmm. you know, so it's, you know, one doesn't need to fear death, as Dr. Moody was saying. You know, it's a very exciting adventure. Life
right.
is an exciting adventure, but death, too, is a wonderfully exciting adventure.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, many people that have experienced the near-death experience, it's just that sometimes they don't want to come back. They are told they have to because they have to come back and learn certain life lessons, whatever the case may be. But once they've crossed over, they are very happy and content in a lot of cases, and they don't want to come back, but they have to, again, to learn certain lessons. But again, what you're saying is don't be afraid of death, but yet many people are. They don't want to see something end because they think that's it. It is the end, but that's not necessarily so. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely not. Although it is, this life and this physical plane is very important because it's where we can actually do the most good. And funny enough, Dr. Moody said that during his near-death experiences that he cataloged many, many of them, there were certain common factors. And one of them, of course, everybody knows, the tunnel, meeting a being of light. And another one was that your whole life experiences chronologically were kind of laid before you. And this is something that Dr. King often talked about, and that people often have regrets. And in fact, this made me laugh. One of the things I read in Dr. Moody's book, Paranormal, his latest book, was that a being said to somebody, "So what have you done with your life?" And the person said, "Well, I joined the Girl Guides," or something like that. And he said, "Well, that was for you." In other words, let's all of us look at our lives and think, what have we actually done for others? You know, because this is and this is interesting that this came up. And one thing during the chronological laying before you, all the things you've done, and this is something very interesting, something I never thought of before, was that you didn't just see the things you'd done, good, bad, and indifferent, but he said you could feel the emotions of the people that these things affected.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really interesting.
Yes, I've read that too, where they have mm-hmm. experienced how the other people have felt, even how it has affected other people's families, you know, people that have been through various situations in war and what have you. In retrospect, they know how not only that person felt at the time that they were going through that conflict, but also they got the impression of how the family felt, that people that were involved and perhaps murdered or killed during certain wars or whatever the case may be, how they felt as well. I mean, it's really a wide-ranging experience.
And yeah, and I also thought it said that as well that, you know, I've made mistakes in this life. And
well, we all have. That's part of the learning process.
Yeah, and I did selfish things, but I didn't realize the full extent of the impact on people close to me and friends and family. And apparently when you go through your life experiences, you feel the impact it makes on others, your decisions too, and what you do. So, in other words, we have to be very... it'd be nice if we were born sort of old, you know, and got younger, because, you know, you sort of realize things as you get older. You have to be not so selfish and be aware of the impact of things that you do on other
right.
people.
Well, it's the old saying, youth is wasted on the young, isn't that? Somewhat true anyway?
Yes, absolutely.
It's always easier to look back and say, well, I should have done this, or I wish I would have done that. But, again, you have to live your life, too. Again, I think people have certain lessons they have to live, and right, wrong, or indifferent, they have to experience certain things in life.
Yes, we do. And then it's only when we are reflective and we look back and we say, well, I shouldn't have done that. At least you've learned that lesson and you're not likely to do it again. So that's,
yeah.
We learn slowly, don't we, humanity?
Right. Well, I was about to say, hopefully we learn, but not always. You know, we still make the same mistakes from time to time. And again, like you said, it keeps coming back in a different form, a different area, a different location, whatever the case may be, but it keeps coming back until hopefully we do learn something and move on beyond that.
Yeah, exactly. They say your karmic pattern, you know, the good, the bad, and the indifferent that you've done in the past comes back to you, right? But it generally Dr. King used to say there's a vein in the law of compassion that allows it. Nothing's inevitable, in other words. So like the Hindu concept of karma is like, well, that's your karma. You know, you're sick, that's your karma, which is kind of like almost cruel, you know. But the Dr. King explained that there's a vein of compassion within the law that allows it to be, like, it may be your karma to be sick, but it also may be your karma at that time to be healed, you know. Mm-hmm. And he took that onto a global level, too. So even though, you know, your karma might come back and nothing's inevitable, you can change it. You can avoid it, too. And this is something I do in my astrology readings. I help people to see how they can avoid karmic knots in advance, you know.
Mm-hmm. Are you able to help your own self with certain readings from astrology, or is it a situation where you're too close and it's not really something that you can see objectively and you go to somebody else for advice?
Actually, I can see, yeah. I've been doing it a long time. I can see pendulums. I'm in the middle of one now, and I know that I have to keep my health, you know, and I'm sort of doing all the right things there and sort of trying to do all the right things. And, you know, yes, I can see it. I don't go to other people. I sort of do my own now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've just experienced that with talking to people over the years. Sometimes they can't divorce themselves from their own lives because of course, they want the best for them, so they're kind of biased. Of course, they expect the best, they want the best, and they can't really see some of the negative things that might be going on. Whereas if they go to somebody that's more open, that is more objective, they might be able to shed some light on what that person is going through or what they might go through.
Absolutely, and that is the beauty of astrology and, you know, psychic readings, good ones, you know, they can really, really help people by being objective and showing a person something in a different light. But I'm pretty objective about myself just because I'm my own kind of study, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I think for many people, it's extremely helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, we just have to start wrapping things up here. I just want to let you give out any information you want to in terms of how people can contact you. I know you've mentioned a few things, but is there anything else you'd like to mention?
Well, I have a website, which is chrissyblaze.com. And if also on the front page of it, you can sign up, the home page, you can sign up for an astrology bulletin that I write, which comes out about once a month, called Cosmic Cafe. And it has you know, astrological news and horoscopes, but also events happening in this area, the Metro Detroit area. So, you know, if you want to find out more, then I advise you, you know, I recommend you go to my website, sign up for Cosmic Cafe, and keep in touch.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very important. And also, while I've got you here, I want to thank you for being a part of the Festival of Enlightenment Holistic Fair. You're going to be coming with us again this year, and this is 5 straight years you've been with us. You've been with us since the beginning. I just want to thank you for your support over the years from you and the Etheria Society. We really do appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Oh, well, thank you, Mike, because I tell you, it's probably the best festival which we go to. It's wonderful. You have such lovely people that come along. We always enjoy it tremendously, so thank you so much for hosting it, for putting it on.
Right. Well, not only that, but you've spoken at a couple of our events as well. So, again, thank you for that. I mean, you've really, again, you've really helped us out.
Oh, anytime. It's my great pleasure, and I really appreciate you, you know, having these things and having your wonderful radio show and the events. And these things are so needed and so important.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much for being on the show. I do appreciate it, and I will see you sometime in the future, I'm sure.
Oh, thank you, Mike. You're a wonderful host. You really are. I know it's not easy to host a show, but you're really, really good.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the compliment.
Oh, of course. Well, see you at the fair, hopefully.
Okay, right. Thank you. I will see
you
there.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Bye-bye. And I just want to thank my guest for this edition of Metaphysically Speaking, Chrissy Blaze, and she is an international speaker, author, and ordained priest in the Etheria Society. And with that, I do want to thank my guest once again, Chrissy Blaze, for being on this edition of Metaphysically Speaking. Found it really interesting, and I was glad she was able to do it. So thanks to her. I also want to thank Brandon Stevens for producing this edition of Metaphysically Speaking. So I do appreciate all of his help. And coming up, something we briefly touched upon in the show, will be Metaphysically Speaking and WHFR presenting once again the Festival of Enlightenment Holistic Fair on Saturday, March 23rd, 2013. From 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. in the Henry Ford Community College Student and Culinary Arts Center. As usual, we are thrilled and excited to bring you this premier holistic event. This year's festival promises to be bigger and better than ever. If you would like to join us as a vendor, reader, or body healer, please call 313-317-6540 or email us at holistic2010@peoplepc.com. We hope you are able to join us at this fantastic festival. I just want to thank you for listening, and have a great day.
WHFR, Dearborn.
Hey, this is Brian Vander Ark, and you're listening to my music on WHFR Dearborn.
Check out the HFCC website. It's hfcc.edu. That's hfcc.edu. Or give me a call, WHFR's Susan McGraw, at 313-845-9842. That's 313-845-9842. Welcome. WHFR Dearborn, proudly presenting Classical 24 and so much more. Something else we'd be proud to present, and that is to thank your business or organization right here on our airwaves. It's called underwriting or sponsorship on WHFR. Now, as you may know, we are a non-commercial educational station. That means we don't play commercials, so you don't have to hear commercial announcements left and right. But what we can do for our FCC designation is do thank yous to different businesses and organizations who sponsor or support our airwaves. That helps us to continue doing what we're doing best and also help your business or organization get the word out to our wonderful loyal listeners. If you'd like more details of how underwriting works and just how cost-effective it is, give me a call. Susan McGraw, WHFR.